Hey, folks, this is Brad Bright, and this is the God is the Issue podcast, where we show how God is the issue in every issue. Now, today we're going to be talking about hate and anger in our culture, which has really become the hallmark of modern American culture. But, folks, let me say by caveat here, the problem is not that there's too much darkness in American culture today. The problem is there is not enough light. In the second half of this podcast, I'm going to talk about what you can do to help increase the level of light this Christmas. But before we go there, let's review some of the ways that hate has surfaced in our culture over the last decade. You know, the most recent group targeted by the forces of unbridled hate have been the Jews. Anti-Semitism reigns supreme on our university campuses today. You know, it's not just the students. It's the faculty and the administration as well. You know, recently, the college presidents of Harvard, University of Pennsylvania, and MIT were questioned by Congress. And when being questioned, they refused to condemn the angry mobs on the campuses who are demanding the genocide of the Jews. Wow. Now, if these mobs were demanding the genocide of the blacks, you know those same college presidents and administrators and faculty would have acted immediately. But since it's the Jews, they don't seem to care. They seem callous to the Jewish babies that Hamas has decapitated. They seem oblivious to the Jewish women that Hamas has raped, violated, and even killed. In fact, they appear to think that such malevolence in some twisted way is justified. I don't get it. But they even seem to support those who want to push the Jews into the sea. Now, another group that is now fashionable to hate are women athletes who refuse to bow at the altar of the trans intersectional supremacy. Now, when real women point out that it is unfair to allow biological males to compete against females, you know, stealing their scholarships, their opportunities, and their awards, they're attacked by misogynistic members of the media and by misogynistic politicians for being anti-trans. Folks, the irony is anything but subtle. You know, it's just kind of same song, second verse, isn't it? Now, before that, it was whites or anyone else who refused to genuflect at the altar of the wokies. You know, the wokies who preached, do unto others as they have done unto you. You know, same song, third verse. Before that, it was the one percenters who needed to pay their fair share. Of course, we were never told what was fair. You know, and the reason why is because this was simply another strategy to create anger and division throughout the culture. You know, same song, fourth verse. Before that, it was a basket full of deplorables. Same song, fifth verse. Before that, it was Christians who embraced biblical teachings, including those about sexual behavior. You know, those who actually believed the Bible. They were branded as homophobes and as haters. Same song, sixth verse. But folks, it's even worse than that. In the past decade, angry, hate-filled people have gone beyond words to now routinely dispensing violence. You know, whether it was Black Lives Matter burning, looting, and maiming, or racists attacking black churches and Jewish synagogues, or ideologues trying to kill Supreme Court justices, or alienated transgenders shooting school children, or hundreds of other mass shootings or stabbings, they've become the norm. You see, hate and anger now dominate our headlines, don't they? Same song, 200th verse. Now, is anyone else seeing the pattern here? It kind of feels like whack-a-mole, doesn't it? But folks, what's the solution? And this is the key part of the conversation. What is the solution? What is the remedy to hate? How can you engage? You know, Martin Luther King made one of the most powerful statements I've ever heard. He said, "Darkness cannot overcome darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot overcome hate. Only love can do that." And folks, he wasn't referring to some vacuous slogan on a t-shirt for living brain donors. You know, love is love, whatever that means. Apples are apples. A rock is a rock. Aren't you impressed? No, Martin Luther King was referring to something substantive. You see, he was a pastor long before he became the conscience of our nation. His view of love was shaped by the Bible. He must have been thinking of Christ-like love. You see, love is the ultimate expression of God's personhood. It is God coming to earth as a baby in a manger. That's what Christmas is all about. Peace on earth, goodwill toward men. You see, God sent his son Jesus to that manger and ultimately to the cross, where he took the bullet that we deserved. We deserved it for our self-centeredness and for our anger toward each other. Folks, that's what love is. That's why the Bible says God is love. You see, that's the love Martin Luther King learned about from reading his Bible. Like Martin Luther King, we need to learn to hate what God hates, but love what God loves. May I tell you a story about a woman in Holland who overcame hate with love? Her name was Corrie ten Boom. Now, Corrie and her family lived in Holland before World War II began. But once World War II began, they began sheltering Jews, hiding Jews from the Nazis. But ultimately, the Nazis caught up with them. And so Corrie and her sister Betsy were put into a concentration camp until the end of the war. However, Betsy never made it to the end of the war because of the harsh conditions and the abuse by the guards. Corrie watched her sister, Betsy, die in that camp. Well, after the war ended and they came out, you know, Corrie was a strong believer in God's love. And so she's tried to start helping other people who were emotionally suffering from the consequences of the war. And here's what she found. She found that those who came to forgive and ultimately love their captors, love their tormentors, were made emotionally, spiritually whole again. But those who couldn't never recovered emotionally. And so Corrie would go around to different churches or around Europe and tell her story and tell what she was trying to do with these broken people. One night when she was in Munich, she was giving a talk in the basement of a church there in Munich. And after the talk was over, people lined up to come and chat with her. And at one point she looked up and she recognized him. There was a man standing in front of her who she immediately recognized as one of the prison guards who had abused her sister. And the horror of the moment filled her heart. And this man came up to her and said, "Fraulein, I was one of the prison guards in that concentration camp where you and your sister were." He said, "I've become a Christian since then. I know God has forgiven me. But," he said, I feel like I need to ask you to forgive me as well. Can you do that?" And he extended his hand toward her. And Corrie said, she froze. She could not lift her hand to meet this gentleman's hand. But she said, finally, you know, she cried out to God in her heart. And she was able to lift her hand. And she said, when their hands touched, she said, "The love of God flooded my heart for this man." And she said, not only had he been set free, but I had been set free as well. Folks, that's what real love is. That's what real love can do, not only for those who have been the perpetrators of violence and hate, but for those who have been the recipients as well. You see, God's love transforms us from the inside out. But the question is how can you use that love to create, to combat hate this Christmas? The Bible gives us four very simple steps regarding how to love the haters. First, in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus said, "Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." You've probably heard that verse before. But so that means the first step in combating hate with love is to pray for those who persecute you, pray for those who hurt you, pray for those who get angry with you. Can you do that? Can you pray for them? Folks, if you're not praying for those who have hurt you, you're doing it your way, not God's. See, you can't change another person's heart. You can't hardly change your own heart, but God is in the business of changing hearts. So ask him to do what only he can do, starting with your own heart. Now, there are two other reasons why you want to pray. One, you need to ask God for wisdom when you go into these situations. Unless you think you're smarter than God, that's only common sense. And secondly, you need to ask God to love through you, just like he did through Corrie ten Boom. Folks, prayer is the first step to loving the haters. Now, the next three steps are in James 1:19. James 1:19 says, be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. So step two is listen. And part of listening is asking good questions, isn't it? Seeking to truly understand. Ask questions like, why do you feel that way? Or have you been hurt by someone? Or this one, I love this one. On a scale of 1 to 10, how strongly do you feel about this? And if they say anything but a 10, if they say a 7, 8, 9, let's say they say an 8, here's what you do. What would it take to move you from an 8 to a 9? Folks, that's a non-threatening question, but there's even more powerful than that. When they answer, you're going to listen closely. Let me tell you why. They are going to tell you their concerns about their own position, concerns that, frankly, they'd probably never otherwise admit. And next, folks, you want to find common ground wherever you can, no matter how small it is. Now, this is not necessarily the same thing as agreement. Let me give you four instances. Say you're pro-life and they're pro-choice, and never the twain shall meet, right? So instead of saying we agree on, you can say, well, clearly we both believe this is a very important issue. You haven't conceded any ground whatsoever, but you have found some common ground. And folks, no matter how small, it's important to find, to establish common ground somewhere. Now, finally, I'm going to give you three words, three powerful words in listening. And that is to say to the person who's talking, say, tell me more. Tell me more. You know, folks, everyone likes to talk about themselves, don't they? They like to talk about what they think. They like to talk about what they feel. So kick that door wide open for them. Let them know it's wide open. You know, I want to hear what you think. Tell me more. Now, if they ultimately come to feel that you care and that you understand them, now, that's very different than agreement, but they come to feel that you understand and you care. You have built a relational bridge, which may well bear fruit later on. Now, the step three is to be slow to speak. Be slow to speak. Why do you want to be slow to speak? Because if your mouth is opening, you're not listening. Notice the verse doesn't say don't speak. It says be slow to speak. In other words, at some point you're going to speak, but not until you have first listened and understood. Now, when I present the gospel to someone, if there is time, I always ask questions first. I love to spend 30 minutes or an hour just asking questions. Why? Because I want to understand the person with whom I'm talking. I want to know what their real issues are so I can answer their real questions. And that's just common sense, isn't it? Now, step four is be slow to anger. Now, why? Well, Chapter 1, verse 20, we hear from God why he thinks that's important. He says, human anger does not produce the righteousness of God. Folks, your anger is not going to produce godly results. Your anger is not going to shine light. Why? Because vomiting anger on another person will never convince them you're right. In fact, it'll push them away and make them even less receptive. As Martin Luther King said, darkness cannot overcome darkness. Anger cannot overcome anger. So folks, when you're tempted to get angry, I want you to ask yourself this question. Do I want to win the person or do I want to win the argument? Did you catch that? Do I want to win the person or do I want to win the argument? Now, sometimes Jesus wanted to win the argument because there were people listening who needed good answers. But usually he wanted to win the person. So ask yourself that question whenever you're tempted to get angry. Now then, let me just summarize quickly for you. How do you combat hate with love? First, pray for those who persecute you. See, God can change a heart. You can't. Second, be quick to listen. Seek to truly understand. Third, be slow to speak. If your mouth is open, you're not listening. And fourth, be slow to get angry. Darkness cannot overcome darkness. Anger cannot overcome anger. So this Christmas, you may be with some of those folks who like to push your buttons. You know the folks I'm talking about? These four steps will help you build bridges rather than walls. And remember, the problem in America is not that there's too much darkness. The problem is there's not enough light. So this Christmas, shine your light. And may you experience God's love this Christmas as you celebrate the birth of Jesus. And when you do, pass it on. You see, God is the issue in every issue, especially when it comes to overcoming hate. Folks, this is Brad Bright. Thanks for joining me today. And please remember to like, subscribe, or share this podcast if you found it helpful or encouraging.